When I was in school, I used to love taking true and false tests. Now, the reason was I figured I only had a 50% chance of getting them wrong, and I figured that if I had studied at all, that chance went down significantly because I could look at the question and I could make a choice based upon my information that I had been given of whether this was true or this was false. You know, it's a little bit easier than taking a multiple choice question test where you've got several and some of them might all look right, but only one of them is. And it was a whole lot easier than those times when you had to give an answer or even do an essay question for your test. But the thing is in life, we often are given those kinds of true or false, yes or no circumstances. But if you've lived life for any time, you know that unlike a true or false test, the circumstances of life are a whole lot more difficult. Because there's so much more involved when somebody says something or a situation arises that you look at and you think should be just as simple as yes or no, true or false. There are so many other things that play into that. Your background, your state of mind at the moment, other people, and so yes and no isn't always that simple. Let me illustrate. Last week we were talking about the Israelites and God starting the nation and the things that He needed to do, and I likened it to a marriage or a class in school. Now, for those of you who are married, I want you to think back with me to those first days, hours, days, weeks of your marriage. Now, I know some of you aren't married and haven't been married, and for you, think of a good friendship that you formed, or think of maybe even a class that you've taken. But if you've been married, just think back to those times, those first few days of marriage. Now let me ask you this as you're thinking back there. How long was it until you had your first disagreement? How long was it until something arose? Maybe it was who was supposed to drive or who was supposed to fill up the car. Maybe it was the position of the toilet seat when the toilet wasn't in use, or the direction that you were supposed to put the toilet paper on the roll or on the holder. Maybe it was who was supposed to cook or who was supposed to mow the yard. Maybe it was who was supposed to take care of a chore, or maybe it was about a preference of when you're supposed to go to bed or what side of the bed you're supposed to sleep on. How long was it until you had your first disagreement? Because here's the thing, this is the person that you have said that you plan on spending the rest of your life with, and here it is, only hours, days, weeks into your marriage, and there's something that you don't agree upon. And these disagreements are normal, they're natural, but they happen because we come into this relationship with expectations. We come into this relationship with things that we've learned in our past. Things that we learned from observing our mom and our dad. Things that we learned from our friends. Things that have influenced who we are. And we come in with these expectations and these lessons that we've learned, and the lessons that I've learned and the lessons that somebody else have learned aren't the same. And so our expectations are different. Our understandings are different. And we come to a point as we travel through the story of the Bible, we come to a point where this becomes clearly evident of the relationship between God and the people of Israel as we come to Exodus chapter 31. Exodus 31 and 32 give us two different sides of the same thing. The two different sides of this this group of people called Israel and the God that they're called to serve and the expectations and the understandings of the relationship and how they depart. So if you want to turn there with me this morning, if you don't have a Bible, we've got Bibles in the pews or in the chair bottoms there in front of you. If you do have one, we'll be at Exodus chapter 31, beginning with verse 12 this morning. It says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Say to the Israelites, you must observe the Sabbath. This is a sign between me and you for the generations to come, so you may know that I am the Lord who makes you holy. Observe the Sabbath, because it is holy to you. Anyone who desecrates it is to be put to death. Those who do any work on that day must be cut off from their people. For 6 days work is to be done, but the seventh day is a day of Sabbath rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day is to be put to death. The Israelites are to observe the Sabbath, celebrating it for generations to come as a lasting covenant. It will be a sign between me and the Israelites forever. For 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day He rested and was refreshed. When the Lord finished speaking to Moses on Sinai, He gave them two tablets of the covenant law, the tablets of stone inscribed by the finger of God. Now when the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, they gathered together around Aaron and said, 'Come, make us gods who will go before us, as this fellow Moses who brought us up out of Egypt. We don't know what has happened to him.' Aaron answered them, 'Take off the gold earrings that your wives, your sons, your daughters are wearing, and bring them to me.' So all the people took off their earrings and brought them to Aaron. He took what they handed him and made it into an idol cast in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. Then he said, 'These are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt.' When Aaron saw this, he built an altar in front of the calf and announced, 'Tomorrow there will be a festival to the Lord.' So the next day the people rose early and sacrificed burnt offerings and presented fellowship offerings. Afterwards they sat down to eat and drink, and they got up to indulge in revelry." Two different views on worship. Two different views on how the people were to come before God. And if you look at them, you see that they're based upon expectations and differing expectations of what worship is supposed to look like. But it also tells me this. It says that we're all going to worship. We're all going to worship. The question is whom will we worship? Whom will get our worship? And how will we worship? It begins, as we look at the account that Moses leaves for us, it begins with true worship. The thing about true worship is that it's easy to say, but it can be difficult to do. It's easy to say, yes, God will worship you, but it can be difficult to do. John, the apostle of Jesus, in 1 John chapter 2, or chapter 3, says it like this. He says, "Dear friends, now we are children of God, and what we will be has not yet been made known. But we know that when Christ appears, we shall be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is. All who have this hope in Him purify themselves just as He is pure." We are called to worship God. We're called to worship Jesus Christ. That is our call. And it's easy to say. It's easy to say that I follow Jesus. It's easy to say that I'm going to go to work. But it's not always easy. Because worshiping God isn't just about the things that we say. Worshiping God is about obedience. Obedience. As you look at the first part of this, that came in Exodus chapter 31, it's talking about the Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy was the second commandment. The second commandment was, was about worshiping God. He says, you shall have no other gods before me. Commandment number two, you shall have no other gods before me. And here is Israel. They're only months into their journey. They're only 40 days into Moses being up on the mountain after having heard the voice of God themselves. And they're being called to worship. The second commandment, have no other gods before me. Worship is about obedience to the one and only God. And what we see is that we're all going to worship something. And God calls us to worship Him. Can we obey Him? Can we believe that God has called us to worship Him and He alone is worthy of our worship? It's about obedience. It's about making a choice that God is worthy of our worship to begin with. But it's also about God being trustworthy. It's about trusting that God can provide. The third commandment. The third commandment is about trusting God. He says, on 6 days you shall do your work, but on the seventh day you're to rest. He's testing the people's ability to trust Him. God has said that I will provide, I will take care of you, I will give you what you need. Now, on the seventh day, you rest. And it's a matter of trust. Do we trust God enough to provide for us? Do you trust God enough to worship Him? Have you ever thought about your situation in life, whatever it is, as an act of worship? One of the things that struck me as I was preparing this sermon was that every situation that we face is an act of worship. Well, we might not think of it like that, but it is. It's an act of worship, and we're called to worship God. I say that because this is one of those things that I struggle with. Trusting God is one of those things that I often struggle with myself. And it really came to light to me this last couple of weeks as I've been waiting, had some more tests run and waiting for those results, and knowing that the doctor said that they would call me at some point in time. But you know how frustrating it can be to sit and wait? To really think that there should be something. And as I was studying for this, one of the things I read was talking about trusting God. As I'm sitting there thinking about it and thinking, you know, do I trust God? Do I trust God with these things that are before me? As I had just thought about and talked about saying, you know, I should probably just call the doctor and see what they know. But it's an act of worship. Do I trust God? Do you trust God with the things of your life? You see, the situations of life, every situation of life we come in to is an opportunity for worship. And God is calling them to obey Him and worship Him. He's calling them to trust them. And then we go to the first commandment and we look at what's taking place as God is giving them the instructions, or giving Moses the instructions about the Sabbath day. And we come to the first commandment when God says, you shall have no other gods before me. You see, obedience to God is about recognizing and acknowledging that there is only one God. While there are a lot of little gods that people worship, there is only one God who is the creator of the universe. There is only one God who is the giver of life. There is only one God who brings us out of captivity in an exodus, he's saying to the people. And he could say the same thing to us. The exodus is slightly different for us. From them it was slavery in Egypt. For us it is slavery to sin, that God has promised us this exodus. And there is only one God. There is only one God. And it's easy to say, but obedience can be difficult. Not only is it calling for our obedience to God as we see this, but it's also counterintuitive. Have you noticed that? That many of the things that God calls us to seem to flip the world upside down. Many of the things that God asks seem so counterintuitive. God says, you know, work for 6 days and rest on the seventh day. And for so often and for so many people, it's been looked at and people just say, you know what, we've got to work 7 days out of the week. And if at all possible, 365 days out of the year, we have to work. And probably the people coming out of Egypt had been accustomed to that. You know, it's one thing if you're the master to take a day off. It's another thing if you're a slave. And you're the master giving the days off. You don't want to lose days of work. You want to work as much as possible, or your servants as much as possible, so you can rest as much as possible. But here's the thing. God says, you know what? Work for 6 days and rest on the seventh day. Work on 6 days and rest on the seventh day. Well, not just rest, but rest and worship. You know how counterintuitive that is? We look for reasons that we shouldn't do that. We look for reasons that things are different for us. And yes, they are. And yes, some of those differences mean that we don't all take the Sabbath, the seventh day of the week, off. But you know how difficult it is for us to really take a day of rest and worship? But here's the thing. What God is saying to the people is that you can accomplish at least as much in 6 days as you would in seven if you'll only trust me. You know how counterintuitive it is to say that less will give you more? If you work for 6 days and work hard, you will accomplish more in 6 days than you will in seven. The thing is modern science is beginning to show us that is so true. That you can work more and be more productive in 6 days if you take the seventh day to rest than you will be in 7 days if you don't take a rest. And others have tried other experiments, and what they find is that 5 or 6 days of work and the day of rest is what works the best. You have more productivity, fewer injuries, and fewer mistakes if you work 5 days, possibly into the sixth, and rest on the seventh. But we have a hard time with that resting on the seventh. And if you read the story and you keep reading the story of the Israelites, you find that they had a problem with it too. Well, you go back just to the story of the manna that we looked at a few weeks ago. Some of them couldn't even believe that God would provide them enough manna on the sixth day that it would last into the seventh day. You read a little farther into the story and you come to a point where there's this man who just decides that he doesn't want to work hard, but he's going to work for 7 days, and so he goes out to get firewood on the Sabbath. Because we don't believe. But here's the thing. Our body needs the rest to function at its best. And our souls and our spirits need to reflect on God to work at their best. And so God says, you take the seventh day And here's the thing, if you're truthfully going to worship God, it can't be a, if I have time. It has to be, this is the commitment, and nothing is going to get in the way of me worshiping. It's kind of what Dan was talking about when he opened up our worship time. Was it last week or the week before? And he was talking about the fact that he had those times when he really didn't feel like he wanted to go to church. But he went. And there are times when we may not feel like worshiping is what we want to do, but we do it anyway.